can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Movie Podcast, brought to you by GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Stacey, and I'm a bit strange, I guess. Not just today, most days, all my life, really, but I'm a bit atypical, and I was even as a child. So I didn't like any of the sort of typical children's shows that people, you know, love and have very fond memories of, and I'll remember just brings up memories of childhood. I didn't like Barney. I didn't like Sesame Street. And I didn't like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And of the three, Mr. Rogers as a kid bugged me the most just because I felt it was so boring. And I can hear some of you out there are just very, very upset with me saying that. But that made it interesting for me then to watch the recent documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, which is about Mr. Rogers and the TV show. This documentary feels very much for people who have a lot of fond memories of watching him on the show. But it comes up twice in the documentary, once at the beginning when the show's starting and then once towards the end when the show is ending, that the show was not like other kids' shows, where other shows made for children were sort of very fast and zany and frenetic. Mr. Rogers was much more slowly paced and deliberate, and that set it apart, but that was also probably a good portion of why I, as a child, didn't like it. And I wasn't on the crazy, crazy shows, but I did kind of, you know, want something to happen in the show, and what is this we're going to just sort of sit and talk and what is this? Why are we, I don't understand. So I think I tried to watch it maybe twice, didn't like it. And then every time it came on after, I was like, quick, change the channel. Nope, not going to do it. But that meant going in for me, I didn't have this sort of, you know, strong sense of fond nostalgia of, oh, my childhood. Oh, I remember that. Oh, that was wonderful. I used to love that. I didn't have any of that. And that doesn't keep you from enjoying this film, but I do think that, not that the movie's made for people necessarily who would absolutely love it, but that it's made in that sort of mindset. The filmmakers clearly very much liked and appreciated Mr. Rogers and thought he was a great person and also a great sort of groundbreaking show. And people who go into the film with that sense already in their mind, I think will really, really enjoy it. People who don't, I think, can still really learn quite a bit because it's a documentary and they have a lot of footage, both of the show itself, but then also sort of behind the scenes footage where there's one where there's an interview with him and he's sitting at a piano and he's just talking about, you know, his sort of ideas about children and childhood and what a children's show should be and about music. And then you get a lot of interviews with different people. You get interviews with people who worked on the show. You also get interviews with his wife and his two sons. And they're all talking both about the person as well as about the show and what that all meant. It's a nice documentary, and it thankfully is set up pretty chronologically, especially for me, since I don't have any knowledge of anything that happened on that show. If they had sort of jumped all around, I would have been very much confused of what year are we in? When did this happen? What's going on here? mostly, for the most part, it goes straight in time. It starts with how the show started and, you know, when things happened in the show, and then when the show kind of, I don't know if it stopped or paused or went on hiatus and then came back. And then, so you start with him with this behind the scenes talking thing, and he's talking about how he started in television. And amongst many things I didn't know about Mr. Rogers was that he was actually an ordained minister. I had heard the sort of urban legend that he was, you know, a former Navy SEAL and had tattoos on his arms, and that's why he always wore the sweater. And they do actually mention that myth in the film as well. So I'm glad to see that wasn't like one kid at my school pulling something over me, but that that was sort of a enduring myth that a lot of people somehow heard about him, which was not true at all. But when he's starting to go into television, he's actually about to go off to seminary, and he had never seen a TV before, and he happens to see one and tells his parents, well, rather than going off to cemetery, I think I'd like to go into television for a bit, because he thinks this would be a very fascinating thing and a way to a new sort of way of communication or what have you. And so he goes off and he starts to work at the local TV station, and they put on a children's show, not the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood, but a different children's show where they show like old film or something. But because it's old film, the film often breaks, and the show evidently was kind of shot live. So if the film broke, they had to sort of quickly improvise to do something. And that's where he sort of just got the idea to have a puppet come through the background and talk to the host to sort of be like, okay, let's fill this dead time that we have right now. And that's sort of where you start getting the start of things. And then he wants to have his own show, and it's so different from anything. And it touches on some really interesting topics, because it wasn't just, he has an interesting way of talking to children. He talks about this one story at the beginning where he felt like he was being tested to see if the children would really accept him, or if they thought he was one of those adults that was just sort of talking down to them. And so the little boy tells him that his, I don't remember what it's called, but his toy, essentially his stuffed toy, was in the washer and its ear came off in the washer. And this is like the test of, how are you going to answer this? Does this mean you're like in with us, or are you just one of those adults who don't get it? To which Mr. Rogers' response is, well, that happens sometimes, but human ears don't come off. And our arms don't come off, and our legs don't come off. And in my thought, I'm just like, that feels a bit simplistic of a way of talking, but this evidently works with the children, and they sort of accept him as his own. And that's how he kind of knows that he can sort of do this going forth and doing the show with children. And he had also studied, I believe, child development, and there was a lot about going on about child development at that time. So he takes that aspect as well into the show about what the show's supposed to be and sort of the philosophy of the show. But then he's not afraid to talk about the more serious topics, because it's brought up that just within, I think, their first week of episodes, they kind of do a thing on the Vietnam War and sort of what's for children to understand. What's with this war? Why are we going to war? Why do people go to war? And they do things on divorce. And I think maybe they do things on suicide, but it wasn't just very simplistic, oh, we have to be bright and happy and smiley sort of children's show. It was talking about a number of serious topics, but I guess at the level of children. There's a really nice moment, and you get a lot of the clips from I believe the place is called Make Believe. I apologize if that's not quite the name of it. But in the show, you start in his house, and then there's this little toy trolley that goes into the tunnel. And in the tunnel is the world of Make Believe or whatever. And that's where you get like a lot of the puppets and lady, I cannot remember her name, but she seems to be like the only human being in Make Believe, and all the rest are puppets. Oh no, wait, we also have the officer and constable, what have you. But she's the main one, and she's related to King Friday, who was a puppet, I believe. But you get this one really sweet scene between her and Daniel the Lion, which is a puppet that Mr. Rogers did the voice of. I believe he did the voice of all the puppets, but Daniel the Lion was one that really came to be connected with him because it felt a lot like who he really was, who he had been growing up as a child. And so they were very sort of co-in-sync. There's a scene between Lady, I cannot remember her name, and Daniel the puppet, where Daniel talks about how he feels like a mistake. And she sings a song to him about how he's not a mistake, but he's singing a song back to her about how he feels like a mistake. And in other TV shows, they probably would have just left it of, he says he's a mistake, she says you're not, and that's it. But you get this third refrain where they're both singing together. He's still singing that he feels like a mistake, and she's singing yet again that you're not. Sort of showing, you know, that they understand that with children, oh, just saying once, oh, it's okay, and you're really fine, and you're perfect just the way you are, isn't, you know, that doesn't solve the problem in real life. And so this idea that, oh, even though you told me I'm fine, I still have these thoughts that I'm not, so I, as the person who loves you, will tell you again that you're fine, of really having a good sense of, you know, what children think and how children feel. But it seems also to be sort of to a certain age, and maybe that's part of why I did not like the show, as I might have been a little too old when I first became aware of it. It seems sort of younger children based for a lot of the show. But there's also a lot about the background. You get the interview with his sons, one of whom looks very much like him. Like, you can tell, you see the Mr. Rogers' wife, and then you see the son, and it's like, yep, those are exactly your parents. You look exactly like a mix of them. It's amazing. But you also get sort of old footage of them as kids, and them talking about him not just as Mr. Rogers on the TV show, but as just Fred Rogers, the person. But then you also get this interesting interview with different people who worked on the show, including Francois Clemens, who played Officer Clemens on the show. And he's interesting for a number of reasons. He's Black, and considering that Mr. Rogers started in the 60s, there was a lot about, you know, race and civil rights. And so there's this one thing where they're showing them putting their feet together in a little kiddie pool and spraying their feet with water to share the pool, and making that commentary that, you know, there's nothing wrong with white and Black people being in a pool together. That's fine. Your race doesn't define you. But then it turns out that the actor who played Officer Clemens is gay and had actually been seen at a well-known gay club. And this information gets back to Mr. Rogers, and he asks him about it. And the Officer Clemens admits that, yes, I was at that club. To which Mr. Rogers' response is, okay, well, you can't go there anymore. Because he was afraid if it came out that one of the actors on his show was gay, they'd lose their sponsorship from, like, Johnson & Johnson and what have you. And we don't go too much into that. It seems that, you know, even the guy who plays Officer Clemens was not too upset about Mr. Rogers and was sort of understanding that it was the time and whatever, but we don't really go into, okay, but that's not quite the message that the show was sending of, you're fine just the way you are. It's like, you're gay, we can't have that be known. Why is that the case? But we don't really touch on that. It just sort of is like, yes, this happened, and we're going to gloss over because wasn't Mr. Rogers a great guy? And it's just like, it's just a very sweetened, it's not overly sweet. Like, it's not like, oh, he was perfect and there was nothing wrong. We don't do that. But it doesn't really want to touch on any aspect that would not be with this Mr. Rogers was possibly the best human being ever sort of thing. So, like, when Mr. Rogers died, there was a protest across the street from his memorial, not really against him, but it was during that time of, let's protest at funerals because they believed God hates the gays, and that all terrible things happening in America were because America wasn't being terrible to the gays, not really having anything to do with Mr. Rogers, but that just happened to be there. And there had been the rumor that Mr. Rogers was gay, but everyone involved says, no, that was not the case at all. But then we're not going to touch on, like, the guy who's talking about the funeral is like, oh, I went over there because that's what he would have wanted, because I saw the children. And I'm like, yeah, but there's also the aspect of you're protesting about this thing that's not at all related and, you know, prejudiced against a whole group of people. And we're just not going to even touch on that issue or what Mr. Rogers would have done about it, because it seems maybe that's the one thing he might not have done about it, being an ordained minister. Like, race was fine and, you know, handicap was fine, but homosexuality maybe was not a topic he was fully accepting over, but we're not gonna delve into that. So I think it's a good documentary. It's probably a really great documentary if you're a huge Mr. Rogers fan, but it feels just a little glossed over for certain aspects of the story. So we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about a different documentary. So stay tuned.
Watching TV has changed over time. Streaming has become the new norm. That's why Golden State Media Concepts Television Podcast dives headfirst to the world of cord cutting. Want to be on the loop of what's hot in Netflix? Or if it's not a preference, what about original shows in Hulu? We've got you covered. Join us as we fill in the blanks and talk about movies to stream and what show you should be binging. This is the Golden State Media Concepts Television Podcast.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. Today we're talking about two documentaries, Won't You Be My Neighbor, about Mr. Rogers, and the second documentary, 20 Feet from Stardom, about backup singers. It's essentially about that. This is a very interesting documentary because it starts in the time frame it's covering, starts about the 60s, where there was this transition to R&B being more popular, I guess, and being more mainstream and not just, you know, quote unquote, colored music. So you start seeing where before backup singers had been sort of, my first thought is the Andrews Sisters, but they were, I believe, a mainstream artist on their own. But you see just very sort of Lily White and Pure and a certain style of music. And as the music was changing, you started needing the backup sound to change as well, because the whole sound was changing. So you started getting these studio sets of black backup singers because that matched the new sound that was becoming popular. And it feels like almost there are some white backup singers, and they're interviewed in the documentary, but all of the ones that we focus on, the ones whose stories are really telling, are black female backup singers. The only non-female one we really get about is Luther Vandross, who was evidently actually a backup singer at one point for David Bowie, which I had no clue about, so that was very interesting. But we focus mostly on three main people. Darlene Love, who was sort of the first backup singer, and she had a group called The Blossoms, and they were like the first studio set backup singers who would sing backup for multiple artists. And then you also have Mary Clayton and Lisa Fisher, and you get sort of the history and the different songs they covered and how things were changing, and also what happened when backup singers would try to go solo and that didn't quite work out. And the film seems they don't come out explicitly and say this, but there does seem to be a bit of a touching on that whole idea about black culture is cool, but black people aren't, that people have talked about in the media in the past few years, because they're on many very famous songs that you probably wouldn't have known, or if you did know there was a backup singer on them, totally didn't know their name, even though for some of these songs, like Mary Clayton did the part on the Rolling Stones' Gimme Shelter, which is, you know, a very famous song, and very famous for when you think of backup singers whose voices you really think about. That's one of those songs of, oh yeah, what would that song be like without that backup singer? It's hard to think about. But, you know, they didn't often, you wouldn't know their name. They didn't get credited on the song. Nowadays, you know, that would have been an artist and it would have been the Rolling Stones featuring whoever. But in that time, it would have just been like, this is someone we paid however much money and they did the recording and they don't get any of the fame or acclaim from that because they're theoretically not that important. You also get with Darlene Love and the Blossoms, they actually were, the term they use is ghosting, a bit like Ghostwriter where, you know, your name's on it, but someone else wrote it. Darlene Love was the ghost singer for the Crystals, where they went in once to record a song and they didn't think anything of it at the time. So they just went out and sort of belted it. But it was used as a full song for the Crystals, who would end up lip syncing it and couldn't actually hit those notes in the same way. But the Blossoms didn't get any credit for that. And then they were told, okay, well, you're going to get your own song as well. So they went and recorded a song thinking it was going to come out under the Blossoms, but then it also came out under the Crystals. So they didn't get any credit at all. And that was, interestingly, under Phil Spector, who is mentioned a couple of times in this and just kind of comes off terrible, because Darlene Love had signed a contract with him and did not like working for him. And so when her contract ended, she wanted to go off and be a solo artist and do her own thing. So she signs a contract with someone else. And then very quickly that contract gets sold back to Phil Spector. So now she's back in this sort of hellhole all over again. And you really do feel just, you feel terrible for all of them, because for some reason, for different reasons for each person, even though they tried to go solo, it didn't quite work out. But you really do kind of feel for Darlene Love, who just kind of went through a lot. And, you know, I had no clue who she was at the time. I, watching this documentary, I kept staring at her because I was like, gosh, she looks familiar. Have I seen her in something? Like, maybe she's the big name. She's the first, really, of the backup singers. So it's just like, maybe that's why, and I should know her, but I just don't recognize the name. She played Murtaugh's wife in the Lethal Weapon movies, and that's why I know her. But I was just like, oh, wow, I didn't know your name then either, but now I get it. There's also, of the main backup singers they feature in this, there's Lisa Fisher, who has sung backup for, and they list for each of these people, you know, major artists they've sung backup for. She sung backup for Luther Vandross, which is how we get to him. She, interestingly, covers the part that Mary Clayton originally recorded on the Rolling Stones. She has sung that part in the Rolling Stones tours since 1989. She also sings backup regularly for Sting. And of the three main women, the fact that Lisa Fisher didn't become a big star, I think, is the most surprising, because you see these older clips of her and it's almost hard because she was thinner then and had long hair, but Lisa Fisher is a tall woman. And so in these old clips, she's wearing these short mini dresses and her legs just go on for days. And she's got this great voice. And it's just like, how did that not become a star? She even won a Grammy at one point. And yet I had never heard her name before watching this documentary. So it's very interesting how these amazing singers, and really listening to the music they play, the recordings of them, is just shocking. You know, how good they can be at singing and had never really heard of it. You've probably heard the songs, you know, Gimme Shelter was very famous. There's also Darlene Love had a Christmas song, which I cannot remember the name of, but is featured in Love Actually. And I'm like, oh, that. Oh, I've totally heard that. Oh, I wouldn't have thought about who was singing that, but okay. But you do just sort of think for especially the sort of main ones of, oh, that was just, you know, whoever. We didn't really name them. There's also a feature on some of the Raylettes, which was Ray Charles' backup singers, and sort of that focus of like the What I'd Say song. And if you've ever heard What I Say, that of all songs in this documentary was the one where I'm like, yeah, that one without the backup singers would be really weird because it has a call and response. He says something and they repeat him. And a lot of that is because Ray Charles' music, but the backup singers as well, were coming out of Black churches and that sort of style of singing. And that's very common in Black churches. This call and response, the preacher says something, the choir responds. But there's also this sense of, I don't even know if it's singing training or technique. A lot of the backup singers, there's a little montage at the beginning where they're like, yeah, my father was a priest or a pastor or deacon or whatever. There's like so many of them. And that's evidently a very stereotypical thing of, yeah, the backup singer who first started in church. But because they started in church, of being in the choir and having to fill this room, there's a sort of singing style. And that was part of why they became the new it thing. Was this new singing style that matched really well with the music that you hadn't really heard before. So it's very interesting to see both the background with the churches, but then also the, I don't even know what you want to call it, unfairness that can happen. There's a few backup singers like Luther Vandross who, you know, went on and made it, and there's a number who tried and didn't make it. And then there are some who are fine just being backup singers, and that's what they enjoy, and they don't really care to, you know, transition to anything else. So you get that with, like, Lisa Fisher, who had actually been very successful and, well, successful-ish. I guess she won a Grammy, but then didn't really have a second album, but doesn't have the character, as they say. There's a lot about to be a successful solo singer, to not just be a background singer, you have to have a certain type of narcissism and a certain amount of ego to do it. And of the three main ones they feature, Mary Clayton probably would have had the best. Mary Clayton's kind of interesting in this. She comes off as a bit of a diva when you first get introduced to her. She's in the car and the documentary people are in there with her. And one of them asks, you know, can you turn off the music for the filming that we're doing right now, because I guess they'll add in the music later or whatever. And she does. But then a second later is like, how can you not have music in a Mary Clayton car? That doesn't make any sense. I'm Mary Clayton. And so you get the sense that, you know, of the three, she was definitely the one that would have pushed herself forward front and center more than either Darlene Love or Lisa Fisher. But it just didn't work out, even though, you know, she was willing. She probably had the level of ego that they say you need. And she had the voice and the talent. But just, it also requires some luck with your releases and whether or not those songs become successful. And for some reason, for these women, it just didn't really happen. So it's kind of heartbreaking at times to watch this and to see, you know, these people who are very, very talented not being successful, whereas other, perhaps less talented people do go on to have a great amount of success. It's show business of all businesses is not a meritocracy. It just, it isn't. But it's also very sad to see, as they talk at the end of the film, that the use of backup singers has lessened in past years because technology. So people can go in and record their own background just because they can record multiple tracks of themselves singing. And you do actually get a video showing Lisa Fisher doing that herself, where you get a video of multiple Lisa Fishers singing at the same time to show how you can essentially do the whole song with just yourself. But then they also talk about how nowadays modern songs are all budgeted for tuning. And someone talks about that, well, tuning, what's that? I had never heard of that before. It's like, oh, well, after the song's recorded, we'll go back and we'll put the singers in tune. And the guy's like, well, why don't they just sing in tune? Oh, that would take too much time. And it's kind of hinted also, possibly talent, if these are not the most talented people. But it does, at the end, end at least a bit on hope. There's a new backup singer who had been preparing with Michael Jackson for his tour when he died, who it seems has a lot of potential and wants to be a solo singer and hopes to be able to overcome that. You do see Lisa Fisher being very happy with her life. You do see that Darlene Love was actually eventually inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So it's, there's a sense of, yeah, it's not fair, but you still got to kind of keep hope, and that's show business. And that's the only way you go on in show business, is to keep hope and keep focusing on the positive. So it was a very interesting documentary to watch, especially for all the songs that A, I didn't know certain singers were on, or B, didn't even consider, like Gimme Shelter, like Sweet Home Alabama. Very interesting. And I kind of just want to go now and download a bunch of those songs. So that's it for today. Thank you for listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.